Welcome to the Natural Allergy Treatment Podcast. I'm your host, Jess, and joining me today is Jenny, our PAT expert naturopath based in Auckland, New Zealand. Hi, Jenny.
Hi, Jess.
We're part of Health and Wellness Australia and Auckland, who are a team of naturopaths around Australia and New Zealand that specialise in a natural allergy treatment called Positive Association Technique, or PAT. So today we'll be discussing a condition we commonly see in our clinics, migraines. The estimated global prevalence of migraines in the latest review of headache studies is 14%. And Migraine Australia also estimates that over 5 million Australians are affected by migraines. And we notice many of our clients, they notice that their migraines are triggered by certain food reactions, and this is where PAT can be beneficial.
Yeah, so migraines have actually been with us since the beginning of humanity. So some of the earliest cases of painful headaches were recorded by the ancient Egyptians, and they date back as far as 12,000 BC. So that's, you know, we've always had them essentially. So it's now the third most common disease globally, with the annual direct economic costs of migraine sickness calculated to exceed $9 billion a year. So, I mean, it's a huge financial problem for people, you know, workplaces and obviously for people. So they occur most often among people aged 20 to 50 years, and they're about three times more common in women than in men. And so although migraines can develop at any age, they usually start during adolescence or early adulthood. And almost 90% of people experience their first migraine before the age of 40 years.
So what distinguishes a migraine from your average headache?
So migraines are really debilitating to a person when they get them, and they're not the same as a bad headache because it involves very complex brain changes. So the blood vessels change how they behave and the nerve cells become really sensitive. And these changes cause this intense pain. So the throbbing pain experienced during a migraine is due to the changes of the blood flow and the increased sensitivity to pain. So as these blood vessels and the brain constrict and then dilate, it can result in that pulsing or throbbing sensation. This fluctuation in blood flow triggers the nerve fibers that sense pain, and that leads to this heightened discomfort during attack. And although a migraine can come without a warning, it is often set off by a trigger. The things that set off a migraine vary from person to person, but a migraine sufferer usually remains sensitive to the same triggers. And the migraines move through different phases, and each phase introduces different symptoms. So the triggers can kickstart a migraine by causing this abnormal brain activity and chemical imbalances, which leads to this heightened sensitivity to things like light and sound.
So could you tell us more about each of these phases?
Sure. So there's the onset phase, which this is sort of marks the beginning of a migraine headache. And the symptoms usually start really subtly, and often with warning signals like mood changes, food cravings, or a stiff neck. And so people with migraines might also notice an increased sensitivity to light and sound, signaling that this a migraine attack is approaching. And so symptoms such as mood swings and sensitivity to light can precede that severe pain characteristic that the migraine attacks by several hours. And usually people kind of know that it's going to come on, and they're like, oh my God, right, I need to, you know, get myself sorted or into a room or, you know, whatever they need to do. So the next phase is the hypersensitivity phase. And during this hypersensitivity phase, the sufferers experience an increased reaction to external and internal stimuli. So the bright lights, the loud noises, or even strong smells can become really unbearable. And so this heightened sensitivity signals that the brain's processing of sensory information is actually altered. So the sufferers also might notice changes in their taste or a tingling sensation on their skin. So the nerve cells in the brain become more reactive, which contributes to this overwhelming sensation. So for individuals going through this phase, everyday environments can turn into like a really challenging space. So the response to these sensations isn't just discomfort. It indicates that there's actually significant changes in how migraine sufferers' brains are interpreting and responding to this basic sensory inputs during the migraine episode. And then you get this attack phase, which marks sort of the peak of the migraine, where individuals experience intense throbbing pain, primarily on one side of the head. And this severe headache can last for hours or even days, making it really difficult to carry out daily activities. So there's symptoms like nausea, vomiting, and extreme sensitivity to light and sound. they often accompany this stage, and people find themselves needing like a dark, quiet space basically to ease this discomfort. And so the changes in the brain activity lead to the activation or specific nerve fibers that affect blood vessels in the brain during this period. So these changes trigger the release of chemicals causing inflammation, which further aggravates this headache pain. And the body's pain receptors become hypersensitive. So they amplify the severity of the migraine symptoms and contribute to this overall impact of the attack phase on the individual's well-being. And then you get this after effect, which is they kind of call it a migraine hangover. And this after effect can bring about symptoms such as fatigue, weakness, difficulty concentrating, and then even this lingering head pain. So it's not uncommon for sensitivity to light and sound to persist during all this time as well. And these effects can last for hours or even days following the initial attack.
So migraines are really debilitating and can have a really severe impact on your quality of life. So what actually causes some people to experience migraines yet not others?
So if you have chronic migraines, your brain acts differently than migraine-free people. Even between episodes, your brain can remain in this overexcited state, which changes your brain structure, possibly causing more attacks. Despite extensive research efforts, scientists are still unsure of the exact cause of migraines because there are so many triggers. But they do know that the brain tissue and the skull are not responsible, since they don't actually have these nerves that trigger pain. Whereas the blood vessels around the head and the neck can signal pain, as can the tissues that surround the brain and some major nerves that origin in the brain. So the scalp, the sinuses, the teeth, the muscles, and the joints of the neck all can cause head pain. And although genetics have been found to play a role, it's not for not in everybody, but 70% of migraine victims have at least one close relative who is affected by them. And researchers have identified over a dozen genes that are connected to migraines. And they've also found that the most migraine sufferers, they have these multiple genes that interact with triggers to set these attacks in motion. So it's definitely genetics is part of it, but it's this connection between the triggers and the genetics that kind of can cause it.
And what are some common migraine triggers?
So there are many factors that influence the migraines, and this includes inflammatory mediators, gut microbia, neuropeptides, the serotonin pathway, stress hormones, structural issues, and nutritional substances. So in regards to the nutritional substances, it means that certain foods and drinks and additives can trigger migraine attacks in some migraine sufferers and not affect others. It also means that what you consume may not trigger an attack unless other physical, environmental, or emotional triggers are also present. So this, plays into how we talk a lot about this, the threshold of when you become, when you go into a symptom. So these different layers are causing a buildup in your body till you get to a point, which is your threshold, where you start going into a symptom or a reaction mode. So it can take up to 1 or 2 days to get to that point where you actually go into this reaction. And when it's foods or the additives, it's this whole, that's why it can take so long for people to actually get into that. And then there's other triggers that are common, which for some people might find strange, but it's very known. Things like changing weather, rising humidity or heat, lack of sleep, oversleeping, fatigue, dehydration, strong smells, hormonal changes, physical, mental, and emotional stress, sensory triggers, bright or flickering lights, loud noises or strong smells, sinus issues, and of course, certain foods. So,
And what are some of the most common dietary triggers that you mentioned?
So there's natural food chemicals like amines, salicylates, and glutamates, food preservatives like nitrates and nitrites, and these are found in processed foods like your bacon, hot dogs, ham, etc. Sulfites, which you find in red wine, artificial sweeteners, like sucralose, which is this, from Splenda and other things, and aspartame from NutraSweet. Food colorings, the yellow dye 5 and 6, and then the red dye 40, and obviously possibly others. And then flavor enhancers, so the good old MSG, you know, your monosodium glutamate, it's also a big trigger.
And it's what you mentioned with that cumulative effect. A lot of people notice it with these either naturally occurring chemicals or the added chemicals, that it kind of, it's like a bucket that's slowly getting filled up, and you may only get that experience, the big attack, once you've surpassed that. So you did mention that a few theories as to what causes migraines have emerged from all this extensive research. What do they entail?
So the theories of migraine pain have evolved over time, with researchers consistently exploring new avenues to explain these complex mechanisms underlying the migraine headaches. So these are the most recent ones that they are aware of. So the first one is, you know, there's the structural triggers. So clinical studies have shown that the neck may be the cause of headaches and migraines in some sufferers. The upper vertebrae can send too much nerve information to the brainstem, which causes an overload or a sensation which can send pain to the head or the face or the neck. So that the head pain generated is the brain's way of warning them that something's wrong, but this pain is often out of proportion with the original problem in the upper vertical spine. So there's definitely some practices where they work specifically in that area and they get really amazing results. There's also this thing called cortical spreading depression. So cortical spreading depression is a phenomenon that's characterized by the temporary suppression of electrical activity in the brain's cortex, which is, you know, part of the brain. So it involves a wave of depolarization followed by this prolonged silencing of neurons, which results in a reduced blood flow and then this altered chemical environment. So this process has been linked to the aura symptoms experienced before some migraines, such as the visual disturbances and the sensory changes. So researchers believe that the cortical spreading depression may contribute to that initial initiation and the progression of migraine attacks, making it kind of a key focus in understanding these neurological mechanisms underlying the migraines. And so during this cortical spreading depression, there is a sudden wave of neuron excitation followed by this inhibition, which can lead to the changes of the blood flow, which triggers those various migraine symptoms. And then there's the chemical changes, like imbalances that play a role in triggering migraines. So the fluctuations in serotonin, dopamine, and other neurotransmitters can lead to this increased sensitivity to pain and changes in blood vessel activity. So these imbalances can also influence how the nerve cells communicate with each other, which contributes to the onset of the migraine. So there's this delicate, the brain has this delicate balance of chemicals like serotonin, dopamine, and calcitonin gene-related peptide, which is CGRP. And these can be disrupted by triggers such as stress, hormonal changes, or certain foods. And when these chemicals are thrown off balance, it can lead to this abnormal neuron firing and heightened pain response, which contributes to the development of the migraine. And I mean, a lot of migraine sufferers will know all about serotonin, because during an attack, serotonins will drop, and this affects the blood vessels and contributes to inflammation. Also, changes in CRP also can trigger the release of these inflammatory substances within the brain that can cause this pain and hypersensitivity. And, you know, a lot of the serotonin agonists or the triptans, these are the main medications that are used for migraine sufferers over the world. But unfortunately, they can only really help when the symptoms have begun and can reduce them, but it doesn't actually prevent them.
You also mentioned that women are more susceptible to experiencing migraines. Is this due to our hormones?
Yeah, so the higher frequency of migraines in women has been related to hormones. So 15% of women report that their first migraine is usually during the same year as the onset of their menstrual period. And more than 50% of women report menstruation as a migraine trigger. So estrogen levels naturally vary in women and are very closely linked to the occurrence of migraines. So research suggests that changes in estrogen levels may trigger these migraines due to their influence on the brain chemicals and the blood vessels. So fluctuations in estrogen can affect how the brain responds to external triggers, which leads to this abnormal neuron firing and increased sensitivity to pain. And the role of estrogen is particularly significant in menstrual migraines, as the drop in estrogen just before menstruation can contribute to this whole massive migraine attack. And the fluctuation of estrogen levels not only affects the brain chemistry, but also plays a role in altering the blood vessel function, which impacts the nerve cells and its response to the pain signals. And additionally, hormonal therapy such as birth control pills or hormone replacement therapy also can impact migraine frequency and severity. So another issue is that falling levels of estrogen and progesterone can affect the normal working of the central nervous system and the regulation of serotonin, which is the feel-good neurotransmitter in the brain. So when the body reaches a certain age, it decides that it no longer needs certain hormones, so it begins to get rid of them slowly. So this dropping off of migraine, of the estrogen can actually trigger migraines more often for some people when they're going into perimenopause and menopause.
And there's also a link between migraines and our gut health.
Yeah, so the intestine, is in constant communication with the brain, and the gut microbiome is an important contributor to this. So one of the theories is how this happens is that bacteria produce a variety of neurotransmitters, including, the said above, serotonin and dopamine and the noradrenaline. So they also can make other molecules such as pro-inflammatory cytokines and fatty acids, all of which kind of can have access to the bloodstream and get transported to the brain where they can influence brain function. So because of this brain-gut connection, researchers looked into the role of probiotics and migraines in 2019 study, and they found that this was one of the largest ever trials that of its kind of examining the effects of probiotic supplementation on a migraine. And the study found that probiotics significantly reduced the frequency and the intensity of the migraines. So 50 participants suffering from chronic migraines or episodic migraines either received a placebo or a probiotic containing 14 strains of bacteria. So after taking the probiotic for 8 to 10 weeks, the migraine attacks had significantly decreased among those who took the probiotic compared to those who only took the placebo. So the frequency of the attack fell by 45% among those with chronic migraine and by 40% among those with episodic migraines. And then with the reduction of the migraine intensity, the corresponding figures were 31% and 29%.
Those are some really impressive results. And if anyone's interested in learning more about the gut microbiome and that side of things, we also did an episode all about the gut health and allergies, which I'll also link in the show notes.
Yeah. There's also a connection between Helicobacter pylori infection and migraines. So recent studies have shown that there's this possible associations with the headaches and migraines and the H. pylori infection in both adults and in pediatric populations. So there was a 1998, they did a study of 200 adult patients they were H. pylori patients that were also suffering from primary headaches, and they found that 40%, it was up to 40% of these patients actually had migraines, and the eradication of the H. pylori significantly reduced this frequency and intensity of these duration of clinical attacks. So there's definitely a connection.
So we actually see a lot of clients in the clinic with irritable bowel syndrome or IBS who also get migraines. What's the connection there?
So studies have found that people with migraines were 4.13 times more likely to have irritable bowel syndrome with those without a migraine. So another study found that people with IBS had a 60% higher risk and were 1.6 higher times likely to have the migraine than people without it. So in addition to having a bi-directional relationship, the first study found that those living with migraine and IBS had severe migraine symptoms. So additionally, more and more studies have shown that a higher prevalence of migraine in patients with irritable bowel syndrome, they did this population study in 1992, there was 350 IBS sufferers and 32% complained of migraine headaches compared to 18% of controls. And then after they did another study and they found similar results with 17% of IBS students, patients, reporting having migraines compared to only 8% in the control group. So Again, there's a very big connection. And children can also sometimes experience this thing called abdominal migraines, which involve similar changes in the brain that cause stomach pain instead of a headache and a migraine. So the exact cause of abdominal migraines is not fully understood, but doctors and researchers believe that changes in the hormones such as serotonin and the neuroendocrine system and changes with the brain-gut connection can trigger the attacks. And stress occurring early in life may also predispose a child to conditions like this abdominal migraine or irritable bowel syndrome.
So is this connection due to food reactions, which can contribute to the symptoms of both conditions?
Yeah, so researchers found that up to 30% of people who experience migraines report certain foods to trigger their migraines. So many also reported accompanying digestive symptoms such as the bloating, the flatulence, diarrhea, which can also be associated with a food reaction and IBS. So Sydney's Royal Prince Alfred Hospital Allergy Unit shows that headaches and migraines can be associated with certain food chemicals. And so according to their research, the percentage of people with headaches or migraines who are likely to be affected by the following food chemicals causes is MSG, preservatives and salicylates, 70% are likely to be affected. Colours and then the amines are 55% likely to be affected, and then synthetic antioxidants are 35% likely to be affected.
So you mentioned amines there, which is a really common part of a PAT treatment plan for migraines. Could you explain what they are in a bit more depth?
Yeah, so the most common food chemical reaction triggering migraines that we see in our clinics is due to naturally occurring food chemical called amines, and that's due to their vasoactive properties. So amines are sometimes called biogenic amines, and their impact on the body is due to the fact that they are biologically active in the body, so they can be absorbed across the gut wall and enter the body where they have roles in the body's chemical processes. So biogenic amines can act as neurotransmitters. So again, there's the serotonin and dopamine connection. They can be involved in local immune responses, such as the inflammation produced by histamine release. They can regulate the functions of the gut. And the classic amine neurotransmitters, serotonin, dopamine, and noradrenaline, they're all essential to this proper brain function, and imbalances can cause problems such as depression, anxiety, and migraines.
And which foods are they highest in?
So foods contain many different types of amines. So if you're sensitive to, you can be sensitive to only some types of amines, but not all. And so you can be fine with some. So because amines are the byproduct of the breakdown of protein, they're high in foods that are slow cooked, fermented, or need to be ripened before we eat them. So in fact, those five C's, which are really well known to migraine sufferers, are all really high in amines, which is cheese, chocolate, especially dark coffee, Coke, and citrus fruits. Other foods that are high in amines include avocados and bananas, because when they ripen, the amine content will increase. So an interesting sign that you react to amines is if you really hate the smell of bananas. Aged and processed meats such as salami, smoked fish, bacon, ham, and aged beef, prawns, fish, meat pies, or anything, foods that have been browned, charred, or overcooked also have really high amine levels. And other major amine foods are egg white, tomatoes, including tomato sauce and canned ones, red and white wine, coconut products, berries, all dried fruits, olives, mushrooms, stock, and apple cider vinegar. But also it's important to note, like fresh chicken or lamb or beef, they're really low in amines when they're first killed, like the meat. But as they age or get closer to the expiry date, there is a noticeable increase in the amines. So from, you know, the list above, you can see that amines are not actually unhealthy foods, or mainly not unhealthy. But it's just that if your body reacts to them, then it doesn't matter how healthy they are. It's just that your body's seeing these things as a problem and is sending you symptoms, and then you react.
So we actually include a comprehensive list of foods that contain amines in our free food chemical intolerance e-pack. So I'll put a link to that in the show notes as well. You mentioned earlier that amines are vasoactive. What does that mean exactly?
So vasoactive just means that they affect the diameter of the blood vessels and so therefore blood pressure. So interestingly, excess amines can induce the effects that are similar to those of histamines, such as adrenaline release, an increase in cardiac output and constriction of blood vessels in the head, which is the mechanism responsible for these amine-induced migraines in particular.
And are there any other symptoms that a reaction to amines can contribute to as well?
Yeah, so the digestive system is partly the reason why people experience many amine symptoms, as it might be due to the person having trouble breaking down and eliminating these chemicals from the body. So almost all food will contain some amines, but certain foods, you know, contain a lot more. And so some people can develop symptoms from having too much of these vasoactive amines in food and drinks. And so the symptoms are similar to those caused by histamine release during an allergic reaction. And that's because histamine actually is a vasoactive amine. And it's the most toxic amine that we find in food. So the most common intoxications known as histamine poisoning involve a variety of symptoms, which is like reddening of the skin, edema and rashes, dilation of your peripheral blood vessels, resulting in hypertension, headache, migraine, diarrhea, and vomiting. So high histamine accumulation can also lead to respiratory failure, sweating, palpitations, rash, and this, that, like a burning sensation. The body's intolerance to histamine can also cause nasal congestion, asthmatic breathing, arrhythmia, urticaria, proctitis, and even just menorrhea. So, you know, it's huge for some people. So the other thing is that when there are also secondary amines present, including putrescine and cadaverine, in the foods as well, it kind of has a synergistic effect, which can make this histamine toxicity and the food poisoning even more potent. And that happens a lot with fish. If it's been, you know, you can get this really bad reaction from fish that has not been, if it warms up, it can actually create too much histidine, which in the fish, and then when you eat it, it converts into histamine in your body and you get this huge big histamine poisoning. It's terrible. I've actually had it. It's horrible.
And so you talked earlier about like this bucket effect where you get this kind of accumulating effect. So even though histamine is a type of amine, how does amine intolerance differ from that classic allergic reaction?
Yeah, so at this point, it's important to note that we are medically speaking about an intolerance versus allergic reactions or food allergies. So this is not an immune system reaction. Rather, it's when someone's intolerant, the nerve endings are being irritated in different parts of the body, particularly the gut. And so these nerve endings, instead of the food allergies, are the main causes of any adverse reaction that people might feel. And so symptoms of amine sensitivity can vary from person to person depending on the amount that you eat or what your tolerance is. But what to watch out is, of course, the migraines and the headaches. But there's also skin conditions such as eczema and hives, sinus trouble, gastrointestinal disorders like irritable bowel syndrome, depression, fatigue, and behavioural problems in children, especially an inability to focus or bedwetting. And also remember that the symptoms of food intolerance can appear up to 48 hours after consumption. So many people find that they only experience symptoms when they kind of consume over that tolerance or that threshold that I was talking about at the beginning. So this can make flare-ups kind of appear more random. So it makes it really difficult to pinpoint a trigger.
And are amines also processed by the DAO enzyme like histamine?
Yeah. So genetics and low levels of some enzymes due to like nutritional deficiencies can influence how amines are broken down in the body. So amines are found, are usually broken down by monooxidized or MOA enzymes found in the gut and the intestine and the liver, but they can build up in the body. And if these enzymes are depleted or blocked or sluggish, they can spark an amine intolerance. Also, diamase oxide or DAO is an enzyme in your body that your body makes to break down histamine from foods. But if your body doesn't produce enough of this DAO, you can experience a histamine intolerance. And DAO also requires B6 for it to function. So low levels can actually impact your body's ability to do this.
So to wrap things up for today, could you explain how you approach a case of migraines in a positive association technique consultation?
Sure. So we're all qualified naturopaths, and we use a form of muscle testing or kinesiology to assess your reactions to a wide range of food, airborne and chemical substances, because everyone's triggers are individual. So how the muscle testing works is when you hold onto a sample vial of the substance, what we're looking for is a change in your muscle strength to indicate a reaction. So if the muscle in your arm stays strong, then that shows that your body is okay with that. But if your muscle weakens, then it indicates that there's a reaction to the substance. So then we use this chiropractic tool called an AcuStim to stimulate the nerve bundles and acupressure points down either side of the spine while you're holding onto that sample. So what that does is we are retraining your body to no longer have a negative reaction to that substance, which helps to reduce the frequency and intensity of these migraine attacks. So some of the most common treatments we start with for migraines are usually amines and other food additives, but this really depends on the individual.
So if you're interested in learning more about positive association technique and whether it's right for you, I'll pop a link to our previous episode called What is PAT in the show notes. And you can also visit our website, naturalallergytreatment.com.au, to get some more information. Otherwise, thanks so much for today, Jenny. It's been really interesting to learn about all the underlying mechanisms for migraines and how we may be able to manage those dietary triggers for some of our listeners. So be sure to subscribe to our channel, and you can also follow us on Instagram at natural.allergy.treatment. Otherwise, I'm looking forward to the next episode, Jenny.
Thanks, Jess. Me too.